So when we come to this particular story, this miraculous mighty deeds of Jesus in raising this poor widow's son, to see how this story relates to a more usual story, let's go a few verses before, to the beginning of this seventh chapter in the Gospel of Luke, to the story of the healing of the centurion's servant. Because this is a little bit more standard, a little more ordinary in that sense. And so in this case, the centurion's servant is sick. And so the centurion doesn't go straight to Jesus, but he goes to his friends who are the Jewish leaders in the town of Capernaum. And he goes to them to say, look, my servant is sick. Can you go and tell Jesus? And so sure enough, they go. And they say, please do this favor for us, because this man is a friend of the Jewish people. In fact, he's helped to build the synagogue here. So please do this for this man, the centurion. And so Jesus, of course, says yes, and he makes his way to go to the house of the centurion. But while he's on his way, the centurion leaves the house and comes and meets him along the path. Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy that you should come under my roof. Because for this reason, neither do I consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my slave, my servant, will be healed. Now, children, this story should be familiar to you, because when you were preparing for reconciliation, this is one of the stories that we gave you, and you had to do that illustration based on this story. And of course, these words are also familiar to us. And of course, this becomes part of the liturgy, part of that response that we make to the Lord just before receiving communion. So when I hold up the bread that has now become the body of the Lord, and I say, behold the Lamb of God, this is our response. Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only say the word and my soul shall be healed. And so this whole sense of this submission is here. And of course, Jesus is amazed by this man's faith. He's a pagan. He's an outsider. He's not Jewish, and yet he has this great faith. And he says, not even in Israel have I found such great faith. So it's faith that is often the precursor to one of these miracle stories, that Jesus is looking for this response of faith in order to be able to answer the prayer and the request. And in this case, of course, the centurion went home and discovered that his servant, his slave, was back well again. So coming now to the story that we hear today, the raising of the widow's son. Now, the first thing, of course, is that Jesus encounters this scene of this young man who's now died being carried out by the townspeople, preparing him for the burial. And that would have all happened on the same day. And so this mass of people weeping and mourning and lamenting, because in Eastern tradition, that is the way of the mourning, that there would be people who would join in the procession. They would cry. In a sense, it gives permission for the people who have lost someone to be able to grieve and to weep more freely. If everyone in the crowd is already weeping and lamenting and mourning, then you have permission to do that. Unlike in our very sanitized version of all of this within the Western tradition, where we're very stoic and we lift us and we're so sorry for your loss and all of this. That's so different from this freedom that the Eastern tradition offers to us. Now, of course, it's not the dead man whose great faith Jesus is responding to. The problem of the dead man is that he's dead. Yes, so he's no good. The widow wouldn't have even been in the situation, the scenario either. The men would have all gone forward like we see in this photo, and then the women would have all gathered together in a later part of the procession. So Jesus wouldn't have even seen the widow initially. So why and whose faith is Jesus responding to? To get a sense of this, we need to first see, well, where is this town, the village of Nain, situated? And we see that it's on one side of the valley of Jezreel, and on the other side of the valley is the town of Nazareth. Has anyone heard of Nazareth? Does anyone know of someone famous that comes from Nazareth? Jesus? Yeah, remember, Jesus is usually a good answer. If I'm asking a question, then Jesus is usually a good answer. Yes, so Jesus probably would have known the village, the town of Nain. It's only about 8 kilometers. For me, with my long legs, that would take, you know, a bit over an hour, hour and a quarter to be able to walk across. So you might have friends. He might have been across to Nain to go to do jobs with his father, Joseph, when he was a carpenter, and to do all that. So they may have even known that this particular young man and his mother. Perhaps he was familiar with them. But certainly we know that he had compassion for another very specific reason. At this stage, his own father, Joseph, has died. There's no mention of Joseph after the time when the Holy Family went to Jerusalem, when Jesus is around the age of 12. And so at this point in the history of Jesus, he's the only son of a widowed mother. And so he would have had compassion for this woman because he knew exactly what that would be like. He would have been thinking about his own mother, Mary, at this stage. And so we're told that when Jesus saw the woman, he was moved with compassion. He said, "Do not cry." He went up and put his hand on the bier, the stretcher that they used to carry out the dead person's body. Even though to touch a dead body would have made Jesus ritually impure, that didn't faze him. That didn't bother him. It would have actually excluded him from worship for a whole week. But there's nothing that will ever keep Jesus away from us. Even if we're dead, even if we're stinky, even if we're in the worst kind of situation or scenario, Jesus will continue to reach out to be with us, because that's the way that he is. And he will always say to us what he said to that young man. "Young man, I tell you to get up, to get off that bier, because death will no longer have control over your life." And of course, this young man responds to this, and he raises himself off the bier, begins to talk, and Jesus, in this beautiful scene, gives the young man back to his mother. Because Jesus is always pointing us back to his mother. And so this sense of the great prophet has appeared among us, and God has done this great work by visiting his people. And he continues to do that with us today, and particularly in the scene and the likeness of Mary as her Immaculate Heart. The sense of Mary as the one who's always wanting to be the disciple pointing us to Jesus. She will do anything to remind us of how precious we are, of how much Jesus wants to love every single one of us. Of course, he loves us automatically. Of course, there's already this abundant love, but we need to receive that gift. And Mary is a great example and sign for us of one who wants to lead us to Jesus. So children, today when you receive this precious gift of Jesus in this Eucharist, come as people prepared to give yourselves, your hearts, your lives to God, and allow the Lord to continue to invite you deeper into his heart, deeper into the mystery of his love for you.